Thank you, Mario. I would like to talk about eye development today and also eye evolution. Here I show you a series of different eye types. You see on the right side, you see the camera type eyes as we find it in vertebrates, in an owl, in a snake, in a frog. Then you have the insect compound eye here in a horsefly. Spiders have, in general, eight eyes, six directed to the front and eight and two to the side, and which are built differently. And then here, for example, in the scallop, you have a different situation, whereas these eyes are all on the head in a direct connection to the brain. What do you do if you have no brain and if you are a poor scallop? Well, you put your eyes at the edge of the mantle here. And these eyes are actually very highly evolved. They are camera-type eyes in the front. That is, they have a lens which projects onto a first retina. And then they have a parabolic mirror in the back of the eye to catch the rest of the light and project it onto a second retina. And the traditional textbook view, including my own textbook, I must say, says that these have evolved separately in all the phyla, mostly through the work of Ernst Mayr. It was proposed that all the phyla developed their eyes differently from different origins, because they are morphologically so different. And I'm trying to prove to you in the course of this talk that probably there was a single monophyletic origin of the eye based on the genetic control. There was already one problem with the polyphyletic hypothesis, and that is that all of these eyes use rhodopsin or opsins as the visual pigment, so they share the essential component of the visual process. The question is, how about the developmental control? Now, how do you get at the genetic control of eye development? This is through mutations. And here I show you a mouse mutation affecting the eye development very radically. This is the small eye gene of the mouse. And you have the normal mouse embryo here, a heterozygous embryo here, and a homozygous mutant embryo down here, which is completely eyeless, noseless, and has some brain alterations on top of it. So this is a lethal embryo, but actually the eye is sort of the limiting component of this phenotype, because already in heterozygotes you have a reduction of the eye size, haploinsufficiency. A very similar syndrome has been found in humans. It's called aniridia, and it also is expressed in heterozygotes by a reduction of eyes, mainly the iris, and there are one or two homozygous fetuses described which lack eyes completely. Now, this gene was cloned first in the mouse by Peter Grus and Claudia Walter, and turned out to be corresponding to the PAX6 gene. And here you have the PAX gene family as cloned by Peter Grus and collaborators. And they show you one thing very nicely about evolution, which is how new genes are made in evolution, namely by tinkering. That's what François Jacob called tinkering, bricolage in French. And what you see here, that to make new PAX genes, various domains are recombined, bits and pieces of various domains are recombined, so that some PAX genes have only a paired box. This is one DNA binding domain. Some also have a homeobox, second DNA binding domain. Then an octapeptide is shared by some. Some have no octapeptide, just paired box and homeobox, like the PAX6 gene. And then some have even only a piece of the homeobox, namely the first alpha helix encoding region of the homeobox. So you see here how new genes are made by recombining bits and pieces of previously evolved genes, and PAX6 is one of them, has two DNA binding domains, and therefore perhaps more specificity than proteins which have only a single binding domain. It turns out that the human oniridia gene is exactly corresponding to the small eye gene of the mouse, and the proteins are identical in sequence, even though mice and men have separated probably some 50 to 60 million years ago. Now, when they studied, Claudio Walter and Peter Grew studied the expression of this gene, it turns out that it's expressed from the very earliest stages of eye development, namely when the optic vesicle forms here, and it's expressed already in the brain and in the optic vesicle and also in the overlying ectoderm from these very earliest stages of eye development. And later on it's expressed in all parts of the eyes, including the retina, the pigment epithelium, the iris, the cornea, the lens, etc. It's also expressed in the nose. I should emphasize in the nasal epithelium you have expression. It's expressed in parts of the brain and the spinal cord all the way down its length. So it's not immediately obvious that this should be a master control gene for eye development, because it's expressed in other organs as well, but this was found to be true for many of the homeotic genes, that they are regionally expressed and work in certain combinations to form certain structures. Now, by accident, and this was a real accident, my graduate student Rebecca Quering cloned the Drosophila homologue of PAX6, and here you see the paired domains compared between the human and the Drosophila gene, and where you have a green star, you have sequence identity. If you calculate, this is 94% sequence identity between the human gene and the Drosophila gene. And in the homeobox, or in the homeodomain, you have 90% sequence identity plus some scattered sequence identity flanking the two boxes. So this came as a total surprise, because it turns out that this is the corresponds to the eyeless gene in Drosophila. Now, we have all been taught that the Drosophila is non-homologous to the vertebrate eye, and that's why this came as a big surprise. Well, it mapped the clone gene mapped closely to the eyeless locus, but we first had to prove that it corresponds really to this gene, which was done by Uwe Waldorf, who found in two of the classical mutations, which have been known since 1915-1920, there are transposon insertions into the gene causing the mutation. There is a blastopia element inserted here into the first intron, and there is a DOC element also inserted very closely, and it turns out that this gene insertion actually prevents expression in the eyes but doesn't destroy the coding region, and the gene is expressed in other parts of the embryo normally. So here you have the expression pattern of the normal gene. You have expression in the brain. Since Drosophila doesn't have a spinal cord, it expresses it in the ventral nervous system. And then you have here the ion login for the larva, these two diagonals. And if you look in the eyeless two mutants, the two diagonals are missing, indicating that the gene is expressed in eyeless two, but it's not expressed in the eyes. And this led actually Uwe Waldorf to postulate that there must be an eye-specific enhancer in this first intron, which later proved to be exact. Now, if you look in the eye imaginal disc, the primordia of the compound eye, you see in the wild-type expression at the anterior end of the disc, which is in the undifferentiated cells. Then there is a morphogenetic furrow and weaker expression only behind the furrow, where the cell, where the omatidia, the individual eyes, differentiate. No expression in eyeless 2, and in eyeless R, the Russian allele, there are only a few positive cells detected here by in situ hybridization. So indeed, the PAX6 corresponds to the eyeless gene of Drosophila. And the two mutations, small I and eyeless, are mutations in homologous genes. Now, this suggested to me that this might be the universal control gene for eye development, shared between insects and vertebrates. And so I proposed to do a very crazy experiment, and this is to try to ectopically express this gene in other parts of the fly's body and to see whether we could induce ectopic eyes. Now, when I presented this idea at our Drosophila meeting in Crete, there were about 20 colleagues, and each one of them had a separate objection do these experiments, and nobody thought this would ever work. But I convinced these two people here, Georg Halder is also in the audience, and Patrick Kautz, that this might be all right, a crazy idea, but worth trying at least. And as you can see, the experiment was successful because this shot was taken after the experiment was done, of course. we're all smiling happily. So what did they do? We took the Gal4 system, which is a yeast transcription factor to drive the islet gene into various different imaginal discs. Normally, the gene is expressed only in the eye disc, but we use the genomic enhancer, which expresses Gal4 in the antenna disc, in the wing disc, and in the leg disc. And in order to drive now islets, you put in front of the islets embryonic cDNA UAS sequences to which Gal4 binds. You cross these two lines, the driver line and the islet line together, and now Gal4 turns on the islet gene in the antenna, in the wing, and in the leg. And you've probably seen these things from the daily press. We can induce eyes on the antenna, on the leg, actually exactly where this blue spot was, on the tibia. This is the tibia unlocker, and indeed the eye appears on the tibia here. And this is my favorite eye on the wing here, a huge eye, compound eye with lenses, pigment, secondary pigment cells, intraomatidial bristles, and a very normal looking eye. Now, we wouldn't expect these eyes from the wing to connect their axons properly to the brain, but there is a fair chance at least that the antennal eyes, which are on stalks here, they're like crabs, you know, they have their eyes on stalks, that this would grow along the antennal nerve back into the brain. And possibly that they could actually see with these eyes. And the ultimate test is electrophysiology. So you give a light pulse down here, and then you record an electroretinogram. One electrode is on the eye, one is on the abdomen as a reference electrode, and then you can record an electroretinogram. At first we got only this kind of response, which is a perfect depolarization and repolarization, but the on and off transients, these two peaklets here, were missing, indicating that these photoreceptors were working, but they were isolated, that is not connected to the brain. There is no postsynaptic response. But just a few months ago, we succeeded in getting even nicer antennal eyes, and one quarter of them actually have a perfectly normal electroretinogram. So these are not only ectopic eyes and not only homeotic in the sense of Bates and that they look like eyes, but they are true eyes and they are functional and they can see with these eyes. We don't yet know what they see because that's a problem in the brain and we have to do behavioral tests and things like that to find out what they see, but at least they do see physiologically. They get a normal electroretinogram. Now, more recently we have found, to our surprise, in collaboration with Czerny and Buslinger in Vienna, that Drosophila has a second eyeless gene, but this gene is confined to higher insects. We call this twin of eyeless, or toy, since it's such a nice toy, and you see here the sequence identity in the two proteins. In yellow you see the paired box, which is very similar between the human and the toy gene, over 90%. And here the homeo box is even more similar, I think 95% sequence homology. Then you have intervening sequences which are also very highly conserved. Now, it turns out that this gene does not occur in the mouse, so for a change we have more genes in Drosophila than in the mouse. Usually it's the other way around. By very careful PCR studies, we found it in Drosophila melanogaster, Viridis, and silk moth. These are holometabolous higher insects, not in lower insects like grasshopper and springtail. We cloned the same gene 37 times, 33 times here, and not in squid, not in sea urchin, not in mouse, not in humans. Here we have only the one PAC6 homolog. Very interesting distribution of the introns, which are completely compatible with Rory Gilbert's theory that the introns are very old in evolution. Namely, mouse and man and flies have conserved the intron sites very precisely over 500 million years. The sequence identity here, 94%, 92%, 90% and 97% in the two domains. Now, occasionally an intron gets lost, and there, Toy has lost one intron here, which is still present in Ilus, and Ilus has lost one intron here, which is still present in Toy. So there's a very strong argument that the introns are very old, and actually we find these all the way down to planaria, these PAC6 introns. There is one new invention in vertebrates, which is this intron here, which allows for differential splicing of a short amino acid sequence into this site. And that is absent from ascidians and is present in all the vertebrates isolated so far. So that may be a newly formed intron, but these are very old, going all the way back probably to Cambrian times. Now, when is this second gene expressed? And this is a very beautiful study here done by Urs Klotter. Normally, the Ilus gene is not expressed at early embryonic stages and then in the brain and in the ventral nerve cord later, but Toy is expressed much earlier. It's expressed at the blastoderm and forms expressed exactly where the eyes and the brain forms a sort of sunglasses, very beautiful sunglasses right over the blastoderm. So we couldn't hope for more. And what is clear here is that when you have a gene duplication, and we have observed that before, when you have a gene duplication, what changes quite rapidly is not the spatial expression of the gene, but it's the timing of gene expression. So this gene is in fact expressed much earlier, Toy, and I'll show you in a minute that it actually is the upstream gene and this is the downstream gene. You can show that by looking at ectopic eyes. Toy can also induce ectopic eyes. Here we've used the DPP enhancer, which is expressed strongly on all six legs, and we get in 100% of the cases ectopic eyes on all six legs, which are quite crippled here, but the eyes are forming quite normally. When you look in Ilus 2 mutations, the diagonals are still there, that this Toy is expressed normally in the eyes independent of Ilus 2, and in the eye disc also you have expression anterior to the morphogenetic furrow and the stripe up here in the antenna. We think that this may be the origin of the nose, but we still have to prove that. Now, if you look in ectopic leg discs, you see that Toy induces Ilus, but Ilus does not induce Toy. So what happens is that Toy turns on Ilus, Ilus makes the ectopic legs, but it's a one-way street. Ilus does not turn on Toy. So Toy seems to be upstream of Ilus. And that actually, I think, is a clear-cut case of what I think is going to be the rule, namely that morphogenetic pathways evolve by intercalating genes into the pathway. So we have an upstream gene which is conserved, which is Ilus or Toy, that is PAC6. And then we have, on the bottom of the hierarchy, we have rhodopsin, which is highly conserved. And then during evolution, various genes are recruited into this pathway, intercalated between the top and the bottom of the cascade. And this is the first case where we can actually demonstrate that. You first duplicate the gene, and then you put one downstream of the other. So Ilus is downstream of Toy. I think that will be the general rule. Maybe some of you remember that Horowitz many years ago postulated how the biochemical pathways arise, and they arise by retrograde evolution. So you first evolve the last enzyme in the pathway, X, Z, then you go back to Y, X, etc., until you arrive at the first enzyme. But this cannot be true for morphogenetic pathways, because you have to keep at least the top and the bottom of the hierarchy intact. So intercalary evolution. Now, we were looking for target genes of islets, and here is one. This is a gene called Cineoculis, also a homeobox gene, which lacks both the eyes and the ocelli on top of the head. Now, the first allele of Cineoculis was isolated, not in my lab, but it turned out to be a deletion, and a deletion in an intron. So this sounded very suspicious to us. Very similar to islets, it raised the possibility there is an eye-specific enhancer in here, because this gene is not a complete null mutant, but it's abolished in its expression in the eyes. So we took various pieces of DNA, fragment number 7 here, covering the Cineoculis 1 deletion, a subfragment number 10, and various other fragments from the 5' end of the gene, and asked, are they regulated by ILS or alias POC6? Well, first, I want to show you, if we put this piece of DNA in front of LAC-C and express it in flies, you can indeed get blue eyes. That is strong expression in the eye disc, weaker expression in the antenna disc, no expression in the wings and in the legs. So indeed, this is an element which is responsible for expression in the eyes. And then we tested it in a yeast 1 hybrid system, and you can see here fragment number 7 and subfragment number 10 work very nicely in the yeast 1 hybrid system, where you express from one plasmid, you express islets, and then you put this as a target for islets in front of a reporter gene, and you measure reporter gene expression. So at least in yeast, islets can activate Cineoculis through this element, and in vitro we can show that we can get a nice gel shift. If we use a heat shock islet extract, we can gel shift this oligonucleotide fragment number 10, whereas we cannot do it in the control, and we can compete specifically with the homologous oligonucleotide, a very clean background result here, done by Teruyuki Niimi, a Japanese postdoc. So we are pretty confident that Cineoculis is downstream of islets and activated by islets expression. Now I would like to come to the evolutionary part, and the eye evolution was a very big problem for Charles Darwin. We know that because from his correspondence with his wife, not even his wife believed when he came in his theory when it came to eyes. Because a priori would think a perfect organ like the eye of an eagle could never develop, evolve by random variation, we would say mutation and selection. But Darwin then devoted a special chapter to organs of extreme perfection in his book, and the evolution of the eye figures first. And he goes on and says, if the eyes would evolve from a very primitive prototype, then selection could work on this prototype and could improve it to make an eagle's eye or a perfect insect eye. And he says, I cannot explain the prototype. This is like the origin of life. Yeah, something has at least to see a little bit, and then selection can work on it. Or something has to live a little bit, and then selection can work on it. But once you have this prototype, my theory, Darwin's theory, can explain probably the evolution of such beautiful structures as the eyes. And he actually defined the prototype by consisting of two cells, minimally, namely a nerve, that is a nerve cell, this was before Cahill, and a pigment cell. And I'll come back to this prototype later. I think it still exists in nature. But then lenses and all the auxiliary components would evolve later, and I would predict this is by intercalary evolution. Now, the textbook system is that you have three major eye types. You have the vertebrate eye, which arises by an evagination of the brain, which means that the photoreceptors point inward, away from the light, strangely enough, whereas the squid eye develops as an invagination of the skin, and therefore the photoreceptors point outward. And this was taken by the neo-Darwinists as evidence that these were of independent origin. I will try to disprove this in a minute. And the Drosophila is morphologically quite different, consists of multiple eyes with multiple lenses. Each has a set of 8 photoreceptor cells and is built completely differently. So this is the classical textbook case of convergence. And I will show you that convergence still has occurred, but from monophyletic origin, and this has devolved by divergent evolution. So my second dream experiment, which I asked Patrick Callas and George Halder to do, was to take the mouse gene and put it into the Drosophila to see whether flies can understand mice. And indeed, you can see here very beautiful ectopic eyes induced by the mouse gene. Of course, what we have done here is simply to take the main switch, the master control gene, from the mouse. So this is not a mouse eye, this is a Drosophila eye, because you need about 2,500 genes, we estimate, to make such an eye. But we have replaced the main switch to switch on all of these 2,500 genes in proper sequence and timing. So this was the first indication that there might be universality. Now, to nail this down, we should be able to induce ectopic eyes in vertebrates. We are not quite there yet, but a group in New York, Altman and collaborators, have succeeded in ectopic expression of the PAX6 gene in Xenopus, and they get at least ectopic lenses. You see here a normal lens and then a number of ectopic lenses, which heavily stain with the lens crystalline antibody, indicating that they are bona fide lenses. So lens induction works. The induction of the total eye still requires some more work. I have some ideas how to do that, but we aren't there yet. But we think this will be possible. Now, what about the squid eye? The squid has a perfectly honest-to-God PAX6 gene, which is extremely similar to the mouse small eye gene. You have eyelids on top, Drosophila, then small eye mouse or an Oniridia human underneath, and you can see very many, very much homology. And it's expressed in the eyes of the squid, in the brain, in the tentacles, that's probably where the nose are, and on the edge of the mantle, that's where the scallop makes its eyes. And of course, it can also induce ectopic eyes in Drosophila. Now we go all the way down in evolution to planarians. In fact, we've also gone down to Selenctrates now, and we find nice PAX6 genes. And there is a planarian species which has the Darwinian prototype. The Japanese species has only one pigment cell here with its nucleus and one nerve cell, one photoreceptor cell. That's exactly the Darwinian prototype. When you in situ hybridize, you find beautiful hybridization both over the pigment cells and over the nerve cells, and the sense control is kosher. So in summary, this is what George Zucker has proposed. He obviously hasn't read Darwin very recently, because he postulates only one photosensitive cell, and he can argue his way out by assuming that the pigment is also localized in this cell as it is in protozoa, and then you have divergent evolution to the fly eye and convergent evolution to the vertebrate eye and the cephalopod eye, but we think this is all monophyletic. Pictures here, they induce these ectopic eyes now in large numbers. Thank you very much.